You hear me all right?
Ladies and gentlemen, front, left, right, back again. Uh-huh. Who is it?
That's crazy, dude. That's a lot of stuff.
It's a lot. And if my computer just starts smoking, I'm not going to be surprised.
Again, who is it? Subway. That's right, folks. This is Irish Tightness stepping away from my hosting duties at Indie Fan Radio to bring you the Subway Domer podcast, obviously with the Subway Domer. Josh, it's been, I think the last one of these that we did was before the season. And my, how things have played out since then. Notre Dame's undefeated. We're going into, obviously, a huge game this week against Florida State, which necessitated the mics being warmed up, the tubes on the amps getting fired on, and you and I speaking. Tell me about your blog, thesubwaydomer.com. What all are you doing this week? Obviously, I expect a lot of content from you. I've hit the site a few times. Tell the folks what's up so far.
Just your normal game week stuff. Adding a little bit here to America. It's a big game, so... they'll be doing a couple of cross-posting things with some Florida State sites, some stuff with Blogwin, and I'm actually something I was going to do before the season started as a weekly thing throughout the season, but I just never did. I'm a Notre Dame haiku, which is going to be a weekly thing now on the site, so that should drop me on a Thursday probably. So for all you haiku wannabes out there, you know, get them ready and get them sent in. There'll be more details, I'm sure, as a post. I wing pretty much everything, so details I have few, but we'll push on nonetheless.
Well, the haiku thing originated most recently from the IBG. That was your question.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite IBG things to drop every year. Is do a hike, you know, tell everybody to do the haikus, and I've done that for a few years. And there's no reason not to do it weekly, and because I get a lot of good, fan responses. Whenever that drops, guys are, you know, putting a few in, and a lot of them are pretty good, and most of them are better than mine, so.
Yeah, no, I mean, I saw Aaron Horvath put a couple of them out, Indy Sports Blogger. I mean, it just seemed across the board, anybody that participated in the IBG, it just seemed, and fans as well, it just seemed like it was very well received. People are firing them off regardless if they're part of the IBG or not. So that would be cool to see if that becomes a weekly feature for you.
I figure between the crab legs and autographs and everything else we got going on here, I think we can get some pretty interesting ones this week.
Right. I'm not a haiku writer per se, though I do know that you have some background in writing lyrics. What I was thinking, and obviously I'm a little bit more of a hip-hop guy at heart, though I don't express that fully in our show on TNNDN. But what I was thinking is a song about FSU and Jameis Winston. And somebody had put "When I Dip, You Dip, We Dip" out there with regards to Folston, if you recall the last game.
Oh, yeah.
Folston kind of does the little do-si-do, goes under London Bridge between the linemen. Sneaks a 1 yard run to a 7 yard, and so I got this song.
It was
beautiful, and we can talk about Folston here coming up. But I want to finish this thought. So what I was thinking was something like, "When I strong, you strong, we strong." You know, I would like to do this "When I Dip, You Dip, We Dip" song of Jameis Winston with some FSU lyrics. You know, like "I force a girl into a thong." "When I strong, you strong, we strong. I stole some crab legs, it ain't wrong. When I strong, you strong, we strong." Am I off? I don't know. I'll let that go. It's not haiku worthy, I know that. Talk to me about Folston. Can he be the damn back?
I think he can. I think it's actually all pretty interesting. And I was wondering how it was going to work out. And I've stayed pretty quiet on the subject because, I don't know. I mean, I think nobody really knows what we really have anyways with the backs. Maybe we do now. But I just kind of thought it was interesting the way things were playing out, considering what Folston did last year. And just watching him and watching how he runs the football. And everything looked really natural. Greg Bryant is a tremendous talent. And so you should not take what I'm saying as a mark against Greg. But he just really hasn't been getting the job done, despite his decent, YPC. Folston just looks to play the part a little better, and when given the opportunity, he's produced. When you look at that game and look what he did, without his production against North Carolina, we probably lose that game. So I feel strongly moving forward. We're halfway through the season now. You're going to start seeing the way the ball gets divvied out. I think strongly more in his favor.
Strongly?
I got you, man.
Okay.
I'm trying not to spit on the phone. Strongly more in his favor, which is a weird phrase to say anyways. But, he's going to get more carries. He's going to see more time. I grew to become a bigger Cam McDaniel fan than I ever thought I would be. And yet I can say I think his carries are going to go down. I think you're going to see, the Folston Bryant pair a lot more with Folston getting the bulk. And that's just my opinion right now. And obviously things can change drastically with Brian Kelly. He's shown that he is not going to give the hook to Golson, but he will give the hook to a running back without, a second's notice.
Yeah. Yeah. How important do you think running the ball is against Florida State? I think we had 219 yards, if I'm not mistaken, against NC, which is one of the better outputs this year. Is this key? Is it, I've kind of jumped ship on the run the damn ball, camp, not because I don't want to, but it's just like,
Can't do it, you can't do it. I mean, so there's, I think even Kelly said against Stanford, what was important was that they kept running the ball. And I think the game plan actually worked quite well for them, despite not getting a whole lot out of the running game. I mean, they got a nice big chunk from CJ ProSize, and that kind of helped them out in the average area. But I'm not too sure if I agree with that, that you have to try. I mean, to me, it seems that they just can't. The line is just lost in the wilderness. They're going to have to pick their spots carefully. And I have no doubt that Kelly can do it. He's a great play caller, but I'm not going to say that we're going to have to run this many yards against Florida State to win. We know that 30 carries gets us a win, but I don't know if we'll be able to see 30 carries. Just you're going to have to wait and see how the ebb and flow of the game goes.
Yeah. Speaking of play callers, Jeff Quinn was fired at Buffalo this week. I raised a little bit of an eyebrow when I saw that. I had an exchange with, whatever the Buffalo blogger was, SB Nation blogger perhaps, earlier, in January, before Denbrock was named as the OC, and I had said his name, and this guy took umbrage with it. Oh, he just got a raise and whatever and all this. You tweeted something out, too, which I had seen. What do you think about now? It's middle of the season. Nothing's going to happen now. Whatever. Denbrock's, and Kelly get along great. I'm not advocating any changes in the staff, but just your personal opinion, knowing the rapport or sensing the rapport that exists between Jeff Quinn and Brian Kelly.
Jeff Quinn's going to be on the Notre Dame sidelines or up in the booth next year, one way or another. I have zero doubt about that. This is a guy that was with Kelly for a lot of years. And if you know Brian Kelly, there's a lot of, he puts a lot of weight into trust. And if he can trust, and this is a coach that he's known and he has trusted for a very long time, who has done a great job for him. And you know, Brian Kelly's a demanding boss. I mean, he's really? One of those bosses that just expect, you know, I mean, he expects the job to be done before he asks for it, basically. You know what I mean? I actually have a guy that I went to high school with that was worked in the SID office at Cincinnati, and I've spoken to him about it before, and he's like, he quit his job because of Brian Kelly.
Wow.
Okay. So, look, Quinn's going to be there. I don't know how the shuffling's going to work. I know people don't like to hear it. They like, you know, there's a loyalty factor. No one wants to talk bad, and I'm not talking about any coach. But to expect the staff to stay intact for another season is kind of, you know, kind of naive anyways.
Yeah.
And there's going to be some changes. You know, maybe a guy gets a head coaching gig somewhere. I know none of us want to see Alford leave, but maybe Alford takes a coaching. I mean, you just never know what's going to happen. But regardless, I do know that Jeff Quinn is going to be – I mean, I'm just positive about it. He's going to be there. Kelly's best offenses were with Quinn helping him out. And Kelly now wants to – he wants to merge more into the role of Uber head coach, meaning –
Yeah.
He wants to divvy out some more of the responsibilities, and which is good, and he should, especially at a place like Notre Dame where the head coach's duties go far beyond on the field stuff. And a guy like Jeff Quinn can do what he wants without him having to tell him or repeat himself.
Yeah, I think that's where when you were talking about trust, I mean, that was the first thing that popped in my head is like, this is at least a guy that, you know, Kelly may feel like he has to call plays now. I don't know if he doesn't trust Brock or whatever. He just wants control. But it seems to me more like that would be – like Jeff Quinn would be a guy he could just hand it to and say, you know, let me know the macro stuff. Otherwise, you know, you can do it and I'm going to
be – Yeah, because I mean, I think the Chuck Martin situation, I think there's a lot more to Chuck Martin leaving for Miami gig than we really know about. I mean, I may be speculating, but before last season, Chuck Martin was never – tab to go anywhere other than a FBS level program as a head coach. Like, he was not going to leave Notre Dame to take a lower tier job. Well, Miami, Ohio is pretty damn low. They've lost a lot of games before he got there.
Yeah.
And so I have a strong feeling that because he was the play caller, quote unquote, last year, obviously we don't know how many plays he really called, but I think there was I don't want to say too big. I mean, there might be a little bit of a rift. And it's just, you don't know exactly what happened, but I have to believe that something happened because him taking the Miami job just didn't seem like it fit at the time.
Yeah.
I mean, just knowing everything that Kelly had talked about, lateral moves and stuff like that, well, that seems more like a lateral move,
being
the Notre Dame offensive coordinator going to be the Miami of Ohio head coach.
Well, and if you look at his pay structure versus something like what Diaco got, I mean, Chuck Martin's not exactly cashing. You know, whatever. Hey, if you want to be the head guy and you can make whatever the hell you want to make, and if you want to load your contract up with incentives or what have you, that's your prerogative. Let's flip side of the ball, though, since I just mentioned Diaco. You and I have not spoke on the airwaves really at all since the season started. Talk to me about Van Gorder through six games now and his replacement of Bob Diaco.
I love him. I think it's just it's the same kind of overall production as Diaco, but just in a different way. And that way actually looks a way better. You know, Diaco had the Bamba don't break philosophy down to a T, and he did it great, and he did it with a lot of great players, though. I think there's some differences here where, you know, Diaco had his system, and that worked great because he had great players all around. And, yeah, there are great players in Notre Dame's defense right now, but there was a lot of question marks, you know, heading into the season. There was a ton.
Sure.
And the way that Brian Van Gorder is able to use his system to get that kind of production, to be a really good defense, you know, is exactly what we needed. And it's, you know, it's more fun to watch anyways. You know, I know we're still having a little bit of problems, you know, getting home off of an edge blitz, but they got no problem coming up the gut. I mean, and it seems to be that, you know, just whatever he's doing is working. You know, and last week, you know, 43 points is nothing to write home about. But North Carolina can put points on the board. I mean, they're a pretty good offensive football team. And it's just every once in a while you're going to get into those games. I don't care who you are. At some point, you know, that's going to be a slugfest. You know, Alabama had a great defense. yet, and I'm not comparing Marquise Williams to Johnny Manziel, but, you know, when they played A&M, there's a lot of points get put up on the board. Sometimes those games just evolve into that. You know, they just – you get games that evolve into these shootouts. So, I mean, overall, I just think moving forward, you know, throughout – who knows how long he's going to stay. But I think we're in a really good spot, you know, having him with every week being able to adjust more of a game plan specifically for the team. Diaco really didn't do that a whole lot. I mean, proof in the pudding was Navy 2010, for God's sakes. But he was a good defensive coordinator. I just think Brian Van Gorder is that next step, and we're going to see it get even better.
All right, so, yeah, North Carolina, I think, is like about 20th in scoring offense. They're actually higher in scoring offense than Florida State, I'm pretty sure. I know they are higher than USC, Alabama, UCLA, tons of teams. So they obviously can you know, have some output, have some production, especially when you turn the ball over three times. Sticking with the defense, do you – let's try to bring this now to Florida State, our opponent this week. Do you think that Van Gorder – defense is a better matchup against Florida State than Diaco? Talk to me, or compare, contrast. Tell me how you think this game will be different with Van Gorder, and then tell me what you think this game against Florida State would be like if Diaco was the DC still.
Well, Van Gorder, I mean, it's going to be just a question of how much he blitzes. I mean, really. When you have a quarterback like Winston, who I'm sure is going to be quarterbacking, despite if he, you know, offs the president tomorrow, you know, the guy can beat you with his arm, beat you with his feet. He's got a lot of weapons around him.
BB guns or receivers?
Yeah, I mean, he's got weapons. So okay. The danger factor there is, you know, just getting burnt, you know, big plays. But I think that's been there all season long, the way he, you know, and the way the defense has played. So I don't think he's too worried about it. But then again, we haven't played a quarterback in the same level, you know, on the same level as Winston.
Yeah, I mean, Kevin Hogan is really not that good. He's not that much of a deep threat
ridiculous.
Either. Yeah.
And I think with Diaco, you would see a lot more sitting back. But then again, I mean, you want to sit back, and a guy like Winston's going to tear you apart regardless. So it's going to be interesting. I really think. They're just gonna. I think he's gonna come out as aggressive as he has been all season, and it's just gonna rely on our defensive backs. You know, how well can they hold up? You know, most of the game. You know, we're thinned out as it is, so you know, playing man to man, bump coverage, and all that, it puts a little bit of wear and tear on you. You know, you're not backpedaling into a zone. You know, running around playing man can wind you out. And so with the lack of depth that we're having right now with injuries and suspensions and whatnot, that's going to be an interesting thing to watch. They're going to have to get pressure. They're going to have to be able to do it, you know, with four guys at some times. Obviously, they'll bring five. They'll bring a six, so they have to on occasion. But they're definitely going to rely on those front four guys to put some type of pressure on Winston, collapsing the pocket, but yet, you know, containing him. Yeah. And that's a tricky, you know, tricky road to, you know, to drive around.
Yeah, you talk about the front four. I don't know if you caught my radio show, which is Indy Fan Radio on TNNDN. We're on Tuesday nights. You don't mind if I plug it there, do you? You don't
right really... away, I started to listen to the, you know, on the podcast the other night, and I was at work.
Yeah, excellent. All right, so in the North Carolina post game, I initiated a new award. I call it the Big Body Bands Award. This goes to my most outstanding lineman either side of the ball. You mentioned the front four on defense. I gave the Big Body Bands Award to Isaac Rochelle. Sheldon Day almost had the pick. He's playing great. Jerron Jones is an absolute man-child. But I am most impressed, I think, with Rochelle so far this year, just from my level of expectation to the production I see. Do you agree on the defensive line, or is there somebody else?
No, I agree with you on Rochelle, actually. I guess I'm, you know, in a way I'll put Sheldon Day in a different category. Because, like you said, the expectation level for him was there, and he's meeting that for sure. But as far as getting blown away by a player, it was going to be up to Jerron Jones and Rochelle, and Jones has done far better than I expected. But I really think Isaac Rochelle has just been playing balls out and just, been an unbelievable anchor on that line for, you know, for Notre Dame's defense to rely on. And he just seems like he's in the right spot. He plays hard. He does all the little things right. I think with guys like Jones and Rochelle, I don't want to take this back to the Weiss days, but, you know, I'm looking for defensive linemen playing with an edge, you know, a little nasty. And I always had my thoughts about the two of them being able to get to that level. I mean, because you have to be on that level to really excel. And I'm starting to see that a lot more from those guys. And that comes from confidence from playing well. You know, if you're not playing well, you're not going to be out there like some douche not, you know, acting like you're harder than hard when you're getting bowled over.
Yeah.
So these guys are playing well. They're playing a little nastier. And I definitely agree. I think Rochelle, I'd give it to him for sure.
Yeah. You also had mentioned just the secondary as far as suspensions and depth. Do you want to talk about – I think it's official now. None of these guys are coming back. They may or may not have a chance to come back in 2015. When I say these guys, I'm talking Kavari Russell, DeVaris Daniels, Kendall Moore, Ishaq Williams, Eiler Hardy. Do you want to talk about it? Do you care? Does it matter? I mean, obviously we care, but does it warrant discussion right now, or what are your thoughts on it if you want to say something?
Yeah. In fact, I was going to try to get something up tonight still. I've been busy. Hardy, I still don't think we know a whole lot, do we? Or did something come up in the last hour?
No, I just assume nobody's coming back at this point.
Yeah, with Moore's done. I mean, he was a fifth year, and I just know that that's not going to come to, you know, nothing's going to come from that. He's gone. With Daniels, I think that's a little tougher. I think definitely, I would say 80%, maybe 90% sure he's going to enter the NFL draft, but you know, he does have someone in his corner, his father, who knows a lot about that kind of stuff. And he may, you know, from the tweet he put out about, you know, that they're still looking at him coming back even after Daniel Tavares said that he was gone, you know, he may end up, you know, wanting to choose that option, wanting that extra year. I mean, all you have to do is ask around that, you know, have dad ask around to some NFL guys that he knows to figure out where he might go. Now, Daniels isn't going to go in the top four rounds. I don't care if he comes back or not. But I just don't think that he's that.
Do you think
he's not? He's just not that kind of NFL draft worthy player. And I say that. And I'm not putting down his talent at all. I just figured in a draft setting, I think he would be a really good receiver for a team. I just don't think, you know, we're talking first four rounds. And with Russell and Ishaq, I think if they can get back to ND, I mean, they want to get back. I think they'll find a way. I mean, those guys, you know, especially with Ishaq, just on the graduating side, I know that's insanely important to him.
Well, you want to see that guy get his degree. What does it say about Brian Kelly? And I had put a tweet out, I don't know, you know, a week and a half ago or whatever it is, just kind of expecting something like this decision to come out. And I said, hey, you know, if these guys are unable to play this year, you know, maybe Kelly can work his redemption voodoo magic on him. You look at Michael Floyd, you look at Everett Golson, you look at DeVaris Daniels, his first run-in with the academic police. What does it say about Brian Kelly that a guy like Kavari Russell, a guy like Ishaq, all these other guys, that they want to come back? Because people see Kelly on TV getting nuts at times. You know, there are certain people that never played football, that never had a coach that yelled, that don't understand that the guy's going to get in your face when you need to do something, but he loves you at the end of the day and he supports you no matter what. What does it say about Brian Kelly that all these guys want to come back and play for Notre Dame?
Honestly, I don't know if it says much about Brian Kelly at all, to be honest with you.
Okay.
I think it has more to do with situationally. A guy like Mike Floyd wasn't going to transfer. You know, he wasn't going to go sit out a year, and he sure as heck wasn't going to go down to FCS and go to a lower level. I mean, all these guys.
Hey, but let me stop you. How sick would it be if Michael Floyd played for a D2 team for a year? What would his stats be?
But that's what I'm saying. Look, none of these guys, situationally, weighing their options out, would a transfer help them out at all? You know, Russell, it wouldn't be a fifth-year deal for Russell. He would have to actually sit out a year. And he's already gone this year. You know, and so, I mean, talking 2 years removed, that's not going to work for him. That's not doing what he needs for him to make it to the league. Guy like Ishaq Williams, he can use that fifth year transfer option where he can play right away next year. But yeah, the Notre Dame degree is important to him. It's what he really wants. So that's not going to work for him either by going somewhere else. So I think if you start looking at it case by case, I think it's more about what's in the best interest of the player and not really, you know, Brian Kelly. But I will say that I will say that it says something about Brian Kelly that he's able to get these guys back. No matter what he says about that, he obviously has a voice to use, and I'm sure that's, you know, used to help get these guys back into school. So
talk to me about turnovers and see, is this a bigger issue? I mean, I think we've had three turnovers now in the last three games.
Yeah, it's definitely reached that point now. I think Syracuse, I think we just kind of, a lot of us kind of just blew it off as, you know, one game, especially after how well they protected the ball before that. And then Stanford, kind of attribute that a little bit to how good of a defense they are and, you know, whatnot. Then you start doing it against North Carolina, who is a very poor defense. And now you got a problem. And really the problem is less to do. And I know Golson has had, you know, he's had two interceptions returned for a touchdown. But that's not what bothers me. You know, interceptions happen as a quarterback. I just assume they're going to throw at least 9 or 10 a year anyways. So whenever they are, or however, whatever outcome comes from the interception is just, that's just life as a quarterback. The fumbles, though, are a great concern. And mainly because a lot of what makes Golson special and a lot of what makes him such a great quarterback is his ability to be mobile, to move, to get that first down on 3rd and 6 when nothing's happening, to scramble for it. You know, and then the extra yards after that. And when your guy, you know, when he's running the football, now everyone's just holding their, you know, it used to be, you know, everyone's holding their breath when Reese was throwing the ball, you know, inside the red zone. Now everybody's holding their breath anytime Golson breaks out of the pocket running the ball.
Yeah.
Because you're just waiting, and it happened the time he ran and fumbled against North Carolina, I knew that was going to happen. I was just like, man, here we go. And sure enough. Now, the one before that, I think he's getting way too much blame for having a piss-poor offensive line this season. I mean, I don't care who you are. You get smoked from behind as a quarterback and you're cocking back a throw, you're probably going to drop the damn ball. I don't care what Mayhawk said, and I am just fucking furious at that asshole. But about stepping up and that, fuck you, dude. Tell your line to block somebody so you're not getting smoked from behind. Don't give me that shit about coming up a half yard in the fucking pocket that collapsed in 2 seconds anyway.
Do you rate the offensive line? Is it piss poor? Is that?
Yeah, okay. I mean, if there was a ranking system, piss poor would be in it. And, you know, they've had their spots, but I mean, Jesus Christ, it is just, it is so tough to watch knowing all this talent that's sitting out there in the skill positions.
What?
And knowing that there's talent right there on the offensive line, they just cannot put it together. And that is the most frustrating part. You know, you have a mobile quarterback, but you don't need to make him mobile on every damn throw because you can't block a guy. They missed assignments. God, watching that line play was like watching, you know, Pee Wee League. You know, you got two guys cracking down on one defensive lineman, and they both whiff. In the meantime, the guy that should have been picked up that was right in front of him is running right past him to Golson. I mean, it's just, and that was consistent. It's been consistent through most of the season. So, I mean, they really got to get their act together.
Wasn't Notre Dame tied for the fewest number of sacks in Division I last year?
Yeah. Yep.
They gave up like 4 or something absurd like that. Is this Harry Hiestand's fault? Whose fault is this? Why has this reached the piss poor classification you put it in?
First of all, we lost a first round draft pick from left tackle Zach Martin, who just might end up being the rookie of the year in the NFC this season. Somebody wrote a column the other day talking about it. That's how good he's playing now, and how good he played while he's at Notre Dame. And then the guy right next to him, Chris Watt, is another. I mean, you lost the left side of your line, and your center situation just isn't. You lost play. There's just attrition. Yeah. I mean, you can boil down to that. I know the guys aren't inexperienced, but yet if you could go back and look at, and I really hate plugging Phil Steele, but you know, as far as the offensive line goes, Notre Dame's offensive line had some of the fewest starts in the country as a total as a group. And so, I mean, you can start looking at that. I mean, it's just a group that needs to come together. But then you make the change, you know, not even halfway through the season about different, you know, the different alignment up. And I'm just kind of scratching my head at why, you know, why are we not seeing McGlinchey, who everyone
the big Glinch
was raving about,
yeah,
at right tackle? Why aren't we seeing him at right tackle? And, you know, and moving Elmer back, you know, into guard and Lombard at guard. You know, I mean, it just, you know, I don't know. I'm not a real big offensive line guy, but something isn't working there.
What?
It's not anybody's all their fault. It's just a big blob of, you know, shit that comes together, and now you got to deal with it.
Is it reasonable for Notre Dame fans to think or expect that it will come together for Florida State? And if not, no. Does this mean that Golson's going to get absolutely abused in the pocket?
I don't think it's reasonable to assume that it's going to come together for him. I think it could be reasonable to assume that they could play better, and you can see, you know, a little better play. And I don't, you know, if it was Tommy Rees back there, yeah, it's going to be a long night. They're just going to tee off and he's done for. But I think, you know, you'll see Golson do his, you know, his magic, you know, floating moves, and he'll be able to survive a little bit. He's going to take a couple sacks Saturday night. That's the thing with mobile quarterbacks too. A lot of them take more sacks than your standard dropback guy, just because they're, you know, trying to create more. Where a dropback guy, you know, just I'm throwing this fucking thing out of bounds. So I don't think it'll be quite as graphic as what you think is him getting murdered back there. But he's definitely going to have some pressure put on him. But it's just, you know, can he get the line to play? I mean, it's just one of those things where you just don't know. When it's, I'm talking about a whole group situation here, not just one player, can you get an entire unit to step up their game? And we'll just have to wait and see on that.
Sticking with our quarterbacks, our side of the ball here, there's a lot of people that were saying Zaire's name in the North Carolina game. They're uttering it. They're thinking it. Yeah. Okay, fine. Let's say, hypothetically, I hope, Golson takes off and gets absolutely rocked by a Florida State defender and gets knocked out of the game, concussed, or he's out for a little bit. And all the crybabies out there that say, oh, he turns it over too much, we need Zaire. All right, all those people get their wish, and Zaire comes in. What happens?
I don't know. I haven't seen enough of Zaire to know. I mean, I don't know how you can call for a guy to play that you don't really know much about. I mean, you may think you know, but you don't. You have no idea. He hasn't had meaningful minutes, and he sure as hell hasn't had meaningful minutes against, you know, the number two team in the country on the road. So I think to expect anything from him, it is naive and premature. I mean, I think he could do well. Depending on, I mean, I just don't know how much he knows and what he doesn't know. But he has the ability to do a lot of what Kelly wants to get done. So he'd have the same issue too with a offensive line that's shaky, and you just don't know exactly what you're going to get yet.
Yeah. Moving to the other side of the other team there, Florida State, sticking with the quarterbacks. I tweeted out, gosh, this has probably been at Irish Titan, is my Twitter handle for anybody out there who doesn't know who I am. Probably like 2 or 3 months ago. I think it was maybe after the crab leg thing. I said, I'm ready to say officially that I can't stand Jameis Winston more than Johnny Manziel. And I didn't think that was possible because Johnny Manziel was the least likable person in college football to me when he played. What is it about Winston besides the fact that he just does the dumbest shit in the world? What's the deal with this guy? God.
I wrote a little bit about that on the Backbite Monday. I think he's a bad dude. And I don't mean that in like a, I don't really know exactly what I mean. I just think he's a bad human being. I'm sure he'd be a good friend, but he seems like a real dick. And I just pushed it more towards he's a bad guy who just so happens to be a giant douchebag. And I don't know how that equation really works, but that's just what he is. And people like that, I can't stand. Nobody can. I mean, that's why, you know, people want to, you wonder why people turn on a guy like Winston. Well, everything that's going on, you know, you can only have so many accusations go against you. And, you know, despite, you know, being cleared or any of that shit, you know, you can only be blamed or be caught out for stuff. And then on top of that, then you're caught red-handed doing things like stealing crab legs. I mean, you're standing on a table yelling out naughty words. I mean, that's, to me, that's no big deal. That's college life. But now, you know, when you're the returning Heisman winner, you know, and all eyes are on you. I mean, that just shows how ridiculous you are. And when people say, well, he can, what kills me is the talk now is how well he plays despite all this noise around him. That just shows how big of a dick and douchebag he is. Not that he's great and focused as a player. That just shows that he has no...
That he's not even worried about
anything.
Right.
And then you got a head coach, which, I mean, who doesn't want to play for Jimbo Fisher? He will back you up your cousin.
Is he the quintessential enabler? Is he the enabler?
For sure. You got to think about how bad Fisher's teams really were up until last year. I mean, really. And coming in, following a guy like Bobby Bowden, your teams are playing pretty poorly despite the fact that you are just absolutely butt-loaded with talent. Now you got a quarterback comes in, wins the Heisman, wins the national title for you. You're not gonna push that guy down. He's just not going to. He's going to ride this guy out and this season out for all he can get because – who knows what they got coming up next? I mean, and I don't think they have a quarterback. I mean, McGuire played well against Clemson, but I'm saying, yes, he's definitely an enabler. And I mean, it is. I'm not going to fault him too much for it, but at some point, you have got to crack the whip a little bit because I mean, enough's got to be.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. I don't know what it is. The guy drives me.
I just think there's so many articles about how focused he is despite all this noise. And I'm just like, that just shows you how big of a fucking douchebag you are for you not to give a flying F about any of the stuff that goes on. Being accused of rape or sexual assault, whatever you want to call it, to me, that's a huge deal.
Well, and then Jimbo comes out in his press conference today, yesterday, says, well, there was no victim in that because there was no crime. It's like, dude, do you honestly believe that or are you just saying that? And do you have
now, when the prosecutor says, not that he was cleared of charges, that they just didn't have enough evidence.
Yeah, right.
You know, they basically had a case but didn't have enough
to
win in court.
What it sounds like
now,
is they didn't have
in America,
the gumption to look.
That means they need something to pin it on you. But to me, I'm telling you, that means they got you. They just don't got you. So for a head coach to definitively come out and make a statement like that, to me, you're just back on the wrong horse. There's so many different ways he could have gone about supporting Winston without having to say all that. I mean, Nick Saban wouldn't say that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
My cousin JJ, I had a phone conversation with him yesterday. It said to me that he goes, who's that number 43? Colin Hill, right? And I was like, yeah. He goes, man, I just hope that dude posterizes Jameis. Just absolutely posterize him, planting him to the ground. If there is a – who on the Notre Dame defense has the absolute best chance to just completely pummel Winston on a blitz?
Well, I mean, I think you got to give the edge a little bit to Jalen just because his talent trumps all. And he has the speed, the power, and all that to do it. But now that you ask the question, I'm wondering if it'd be an assist from Jalen mostly, where Jalen's coming at him, Jameis turns, and there's Isaac Rochelle or Sheldon Day just fucking cleaning that motherfucker's clock.
The only
and I went to I'm gonna go to bed sometime in the next 48 hours, and I think I'm gonna go to bed to that image in my head.
Yeah. He said that, and it's stuck with me ever since. I'm just running these scenarios through my head of who can just knock some sense into this clown.
The problem is the guy's – I mean, listen, the guy's a great football player, and he's tough as nails out there on the football field. I am not taking away anything that guy can do between the lines.
No, he's great. He's just a tit.
So what I'm saying is to have any assumption that we're just going to knock his dick in the dirt as much as you wish it – I really can't imagine it actually happened, but we can all hope.
The only problem I have with a guy like Rochelle or Day is that I don't think they can have they have mass, right? They have mass behind them. That's force. That's part of the equation of force. But I don't think that they're going to have enough speed
Well, what, that's
I'm thinking
what I'm
more like here. Shoemate. I'm thinking Shoemate coming from the backside. Like, I need somebody with just a full out head of steam, like just running balls out.
I think however happens, it's going to end up Tranquil? Being Jalen with the assist because he's going to be up in his face on something.
Yeah.
Wentz is going to turn around, and whoever it might be, and you might be right, it might be Shoe coming from 20 yards, full head of steam, and you know he can hit. Or maybe it's Redfield, who you know doesn't give a shit about taking a flag.
You're right. Yeah, you're right. I didn't even think about him. He's got the history of knocking QBs in the dome too. Not that I'm advocating anybody to go high. No, I just for me that would be especially if Notre Dame wins. But that image because it seems like the whole freaking country is turning. Nobody likes this guy. Even Florida State fans probably are getting sick of defending him.
Florida State Twitter is strong.
They're going to die with him. That's fine. So they're the only people. Whatever. Everybody outside of the Florida State fan base thinks the guy's a complete boob, and they're right. So I just – all I want is, A, for Notre Dame to win, and however the hell they need to win, that's how I want them to win. And then secondly, I just want that image that will live in infamy of just Jameis being folded up like a taco with somebody's shoulder pad right in his gut, you know? And I hope Redfield might be the guy, man. Redfield might be the guy. Hey, listen, we got 5 minutes left. This is a Subway Domer podcast. Obviously, at the Subway Domer is the other side of the microphone here. I am Irish Tightness, at Irish Tightness on Twitter. We got 5 minutes left in this thing. 45 minutes, kind of my threshold here. What do we need to know about Florida State, or what should people look for on your website in addition to the academic article that you're going to put out here later this evening?
Look, Florida State's a dangerous football team. They're dangerous for lots of reasons on the field, but mentally right now, I think the worst thing that could have happened for Notre Dame is for Florida State to drop out of that number one ranking altogether.
Yeah, no.
I think that plays right into – it's a shame, but it plays right into the disrespect card that a head coach can use all week long to, you know, to really focus the team. I mean, it's not that hard to focus a team on a big game, number two versus number five matchup at home. But you can amp it up so much more by playing that disrespect card. You know, I think they're going to do that. You know, I think it's being done right now. I think they're going to come out just ready to fucking rock. And we just got to hope that we are too. I mean, like I said, you know, if you can't get up for a game like this, what the hell are you doing? So I think what we're going to expect is Florida State's absolute best shot, their best game of the season. We can only hope that we give ours. I don't see any of this nonsense that's being put out there about how much faster Florida State is than us, because I don't buy it at all. That's thinking that's, you know, 10 years outdated. You know, I don't know what people have been watching the last couple of years, but there's no lack of team speed, you know, on Notre Dame side of the ball. So. I just think that's what's gonna happen. I mean, Notre Dame's gonna have to prepare to go down there and face the absolute best from one of the best teams in the country, who's gonna be playing with a little bit of a chip on their shoulders, which is a tough opponent.
Does it matter that this is our first Chiro game? Does it matter that it's our first game on grass? Are these just blah blah talking points that people say? Does none of it matters, right?
I mean, everyone acts like these guys have never played on fucking grass before. I really don't think it's gonna matter. If you see a slip, someone's going to bring it up and they're going to make it matter. But I don't really think it matters all that much. The first true road game, maybe a little bit. But you got to remember, this Notre Dame team is used to these types of games. I mean, they're used to – I mean, if they're going on the road, they know it's going to be prime time. I mean, it's just the way that these games have gone over the last, you know, 5-6 years. You know, if Notre Dame goes to the road, it's a prime time game. It's a big nationally televised game. I don't give a shit who the opponent is. So I don't think it's going to affect them as much as what people would, you know, would lead you to believe. And the grass thing is just kind of a funny commentary.
Yeah.
Sidebar.
Yeah. Yeah. Irish win.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, man.
Yeah, fuck yeah.
All right. Win. I'm with you too. I like it. Excellent.
I'm going to say 27,
24. OT or regular?
Give up a garbage touchdown.
Yeah.
At the end.
Okay. All right. Excellent, excellent. What do you want to ride out to, man? This is anybody that's new to the Subway Domer podcast. When your boy Irish Tightness on here, this is kind of the last hurrah for me. Just make sure I put the beats on that SD wants to ride out to. What are you feeling, man?
I'm feeling some guru, some gangstar. I am. You don't have to go that route.
This is not the first time that you said guru either.
No, it's not, dude. I've been riding that train for 20 years, so.
Excellent. All right, my man, I appreciate speaking with you. I'm happy to produce the Subway Domer podcast. You can find this at thesubwaydomer.com. It'll be on your Podomatic site. Anybody that's listening on which would be Wednesday, October 15th, later tonight, I'll be doing a show at 9:30 live. Follow me at Irish Titans. I'll put a link out. Josh, I appreciate your time, sir.
Go, hey, you.
Go Irish.
Go Irish.
All right, man. See you. Blocking out your sunlight. Your image and your business were truly not done right. Throw up your heel now, divine saviors. You got no hand skills. There's no security to save you. No pager, no celly, no drop top Benzie. I came to bring your phony hip hop to an end. My art of war will leave you sore from the abuse, because you must meet your moment of truth. They say it's lonely at the top in whatever you do. You always gotta watch motherfuckers around you. No one is untouchable, no man is bulletproof. We all must meet our moment of truth.